Greetings once again, America. My name is Doug McBurney, and you may have heard the news, but stand by now for the worldview. That's right, it's the weekly worldview. Welcome back to the show where we don't take calls, we don't tolerate sponsors, but we do focus on the events of the week. Through the lens of original thought, it's so glad to have you back as we get ready to go here. Did you see this new poll? I just saw this new poll all over the website on all of the conservative news sites. Romney beats Barry if the election were held today.
Romney!
Oh, they're greasing the skids for another Romney run. It's just depressing. The only man who could possibly lose to Hillary, or who's that Indian chick from Massachusetts? Remember the one who said she was an Indian? I can't remember her name. Romney. But the election's not going to be held today. It's going to be held in November of 2016. And Romney's one of the few Republicans who could lose it. And it seems they're greasing the skids, and it's just depressing. I just saw that before I went on. Otherwise, I would never mention Mitt Romney. Except there's obviously a move afoot to put Romney back. The New York Times has come out for legalizing dope. No surprise there.
You remember that church?
Which church? So we were out in California recently, and we wanted to go see Mitt Romney's house, which we did do in La Jolla. And from the back, it looks like a shack from what we were able to see. It's under massive construction. But anyway, we were out there just driving around, taking in the scenes of San Diego County. Went to see Mitt's house, tried to Google it up. You know, where is Mitt's house in La Jolla? And there was a link. You know, there was Mitt's house, and then there was Mitt's other house. And when you click that link, it was the giant Mormon tabernacle that Mitt built there right off of I-5. In La Jolla, Mitt's other house. He didn't build it himself. I don't think he's all that handy with a hammer and nail. But I think he had a lot to do with its construction. He's a serious Mormon. And Republicans are apparently serious about putting him back up on the chopping block. So the New York Times legalized dope. That's really all I've got of the active headlines that I've been following. The war rages on in Gaza and all that. But I wanted to tell you, I'm a commentary on lawyers again. I believe it was Shakespeare who said, first, kill all the lawyers. And I agree with him metaphorically. I just installed a new toilet seat here at the McBurney compound. It's got a safety disclaimer on it, a sticker with more words than the Declaration of Independence. On a safety disclaimer on a toilet seat, for crying out loud. And it's in six different languages, seven different languages. Just unbelievable. You know, it's just English and Spanish, the two official languages of the United States. Anyway, just first kill all the lawyers, he said, metaphorically speaking, of course. But let's move on. We've got our opening story is from the Bad Religion File. This is from CBS in Cleveland, Fort Wayne, Indiana. An Indiana woman took her hands off the steering wheel last week as she was driving along. That's right, 25-year-old Priyanda Hill has told authorities that she let go of the wheel of her car while she was driving because, quote, God told me he would take it from here, unquote. So she just let go of the steering wheel, believing that God would take it from there. Well, her car veered off the road and slammed into a man on his motorcycle. Then the car ran over that same man. Yeah, the accident broke all of the motorcyclist's ribs on his left side, cut his spleen, bruised his kidney, and caused severe injuries to his left arm and leg. The woman, for whom God was apparently not intervening, at least not very successfully, she kept on going. She hit a pickup truck twice, and she only stopped when her car crashed, finally. So she told officers, number one, God told her he would take it from here. And second, yes, that was Vicodin. The prescription she had was for Vicodin. Not known to be a psychedelic or a hallucinogenic, but anyway, that's the bad religion file. Unless, for some reason, this man on the motorcycle had it coming to him, which, well, we doubt that. Anyway, don't let go of the steering wheel of your life hoping that God will take it from here. That's not recommended. What is recommended is to look into his word and to take his advice as revealed in the scripture and apply that to your life. But don't let go of the steering wheel, please, for crying out loud. People embarrass, Jesus Christ must be quite often embarrassed by his followers, well, especially when they're on Vicodin and victims of bad religion. Who was I reading about whose daddy was a, oh, I'll get to that. His daddy was a Pentecostal preacher. I'll get to that. But first, let's delve deeper into the bad religion file. From Breitbart, a large crowd of Christians and supporters gathered in front of the French Parliament building last week to express support for the native Christian Assyrian communities of Iraq. And joining the large crowds of Christians were about 100 members of the French Parliament standing up to voice their support for the Christians who, as we reported last week, have been virtually eliminated from Nineveh, where there have been Christians for about 2,000 and some odd years. And here we have the French standing up and voicing. Have we had any demonstrations here in America standing? I mean, besides on this show. Well, I think we're organizing a rally for Saeed Abedini, the Christian who's held in Iran. I believe it's his two-year anniversary coming up in September. We're going to be hosting a prayer vigil and a rally here in Denver. Maybe we will speak at that public rally for the Christians of Nineveh. But back to France, the French stepping up. Can you believe it? Remember they had all those protests against homo marriage earlier this year? Yeah. Well, the crowd gathered with large signs with the Arabic letter N written on them. That's the letter that Islamists spray paint on Christian homes and businesses in Nineveh province to mark the homes and businesses as Nasrani. Nasrani, yeah, that's Arabic for Nazarene, meaning Christian. Protests against Israel's operation in Gaza have been going on in France, and I'm sure you've heard a lot about those. I believe I even reported on some of those. These anti-Israel protests have resulted in the looting of Jewish businesses and extreme anti-Semitic violence. But so you've got that going on in France. The Christians and the MPs who stood up for the Christians in Nineveh province, they did not burn or loot or break anything. They just stood up and said, somebody should rescue the Christians. And as well, somebody should, but France can't do it. The United States can't do it. Britain, I think they did have demonstrations in Britain as well, the formerly Great Britain, over this past week in support of the Christians of Nineveh. But it's like a Twitter campaign. Unless you can put boots on the ground, it's nice to stand up and say we support the Christians. But meanwhile, they're being forced by the Islamists, the fascists, the Islamo-Nazis to convert, pay the tax, or die. Breitbart reports that the brutality of the ISIS takeover of northern Iraq has prompted many to condemn them. Even a minority of Muslims have condemned ISIS. Yes, a minority, I said. Now, there's this group called the International Union of Muslim Scholars. They've issued a statement condemning ISIS and distancing their religion from actions of the group. Well, good try. It's a little too little. It's a little too late. Why is it that your average run-of-the-mill Muslim seems to tolerate this type of violence and brutality? Oh, that's right, because it's a satanic false religion, hell-bent on the destruction of Israel and all that is good. That's Islam. Yeah, and I don't care how you practice it. Whether you're just a pew sitter or whether you're on the front lines as an ISIS fighter, they are all involved and they all bear guilt because of their lack of ability to control themselves. And Islam is what must be fought against. And that's a spiritual battle that the Christians have to fight. And the Christians appear to have lost a temporal battle in Nineveh province. But note to ISIS and the Muslims, the Christians will be back. Yes, the Christians will be back, and you better look out, okay, because it's not going to be pretty. All right, now, we are going to do an update from the war file. Last Friday marked 100 days since 276 schoolgirls were abducted and have been held captive by Boko Haram. That's the 100th day during which Nigeria, its neighbors, its allies, the United States, have all failed to locate or rescue any of the girls. A few have escaped, but not due to anything that any of the good guys are doing. If there are any good guys left, we just don't know where they are. On May 30th, according to Breitbart, it was reported that two of the kidnapped girls were found tied to a tree, raped, and half dead. Four other girls had been killed, and that's just what we know about. And a handful have escaped. And Breitbart updated this story with something I did not know. In a previous attack on a boys' school, Boko Haram demanded that the boys drop their pants and then they cut the throats of any of the boys who had pubic hair. And they left those who had none alive, following their strict rule that they do not kill children, they say. In that attack, 50 boys between the ages of 11 and 18 were killed, had their throats cut by Boko Haram. Now back to the girls. The girls have allegedly been sold as brides to members of Boko Haram for $12.50 each. And there are reports that some of the girls are in fact pregnant by these Islamist maniacs, demonic, satanic, evil maniacs. Nigeria's Christians and the world is doing nothing to stop Boko Haram. The abduction of these innocent schoolgirls is a tragedy, according to human rights lawyer Emmanuel Ogibe. He says it's a tragedy that has upset millions across the globe, and yet our governments, plural, are incapable of rescuing them. So while all the other news takes up your time and my time and occupies our gray matter, these girls remain enslaved in modern-day slavery by these Islamic fascist Nazi fanatics. And the West and Christendom, or what used to be called Christendom, is just impotent to do anything about it. And it's just sad and embarrassing. And we need to lift up our brothers and sisters in the Middle East, the Christians, in prayer, and hope that God gives them the strength to carry on. More from the bad religion file. Yes, indeed. This is from a website that I prefer not to even name, because I find them all very distasteful over there. It's the Daily Caller. It's that guy with the bow tie. Just something about that guy creeps me out. Anyway, they report that Iran's supreme leader, the Ayatollah Ali Khamenei, has stated last week that the only solution for the Middle East, specifically Gaza, is the destruction of Israel. Well, no surprise there. Of course, that's what the Ayatollah thinks. He's an Ayatollah. Khamenei addressed the conflict in Gaza in a meeting with Iranian college students. That's where he made these comments. He's kind of like Barry Ho. You know, he makes statements, his most ideological statements, in front of school kids. Barry does that a lot. And the Ayatollah is, well, I don't know who's following who. I don't know who has whose mobile number, but there's only one solution for Gaza, the West Bank, from Dan to Beersheba. There's really only one solution. Jesus Christ is the solution, the reconciliation of the Arab and the Jew in one body, the body of Jesus Christ. Be any doubt that my extremely attractive audio engineer is on top of things. I mean, here I am, the host. I solved the biggest problem on the planet, the Arab-Jewish conflict, with the solution, the one solution, Jesus Christ. And my extremely attractive audio engineer is on the spot with the perfect bumper. That's why we hired her. Double her pay immediately. Thank you very much.
I don't get
paid. Yes. That's why we're going to double. We'll triple it, as a matter of fact. All right. See, if we had sponsors, that's one of the things I didn't tell you when we banned the sponsors. That meant that there'd be no income, no revenue. So that is the solution, and we'll even talk a little bit more about that later, because I am pondering, how is it that you get the one solution into that region when both sides are avidly opposed to even hearing about the name of Jesus Christ or the gospel? Talk about an implacable difficulty. How do you get the gospel when both sides who need it absolutely don't want to hear it, and in fact will probably kill you or at least arrest you and put you in jail if you do any meaningful evangelization in their midst? It's really sad. But I think the Bible says it's going to happen. I do. I believe that. I believe there's going to be a reconciliation of the Arab and the Jew and the Christian. I do believe that that's going to occur before the end. So we'll ponder that as we go through the news. And of course, if you people have any ideas, feel free to send me an email. Don't call, because we don't take calls. All right, now, speaking of the Arab and the Jew, my pastor and my sometimes host on the real radio here in Denver, Bob Inyart, pointed out earlier in the week on his show that when the Arab trades 1,000 of their fighters for one Jewish hostage, what the Arab unintentionally does is demean the value of their own people, showing that the Jews care more about one Jew than the Arabs care about 1,000. And in that vein, we'll go to the war file. On Breitbart, there was a picture this past week online of Israeli forces carrying a wounded bomb-sniffing dog off the battlefield. Yeah, a dog. It was one of their bomb sniffers, and he was injured in battle, and they had him on a stretcher, and the IDF forces were risking life and limb to carry this bomb-sniffing dog back to the rear with the gear to get medical attention. By contrast, Breitbart reports, Hamas has been suspected of rigging a donkey with explosives and trying to use the animal as a suicide bomber against Israeli forces. Yeah. They rigged up a donkey with a bomb. Here's another. Just to not to put too fine a point on this, but another report from the war file. A 2012 article in the Hamas Sympathetic Journal of Palestine Studies. This is a magazine online and print magazine that is sympathetic, at least to the Palestinian situation. Let's put it that way. Well, there was an article in 2012 called Gaza's Tunnel Phenomenon, The Unintended Dynamics of Israel's Siege, as published in the magazine Journal of Palestine Studies. This article stated that despite the economic success of the array of tunnels built by Hamas underneath the Egyptian border, which has enriched Hamas through a thriving black market, as well as arming it with new weapons. There were a few drawbacks, the article said, a few drawbacks. What may you ask? One of the drawbacks was a cavalier approach to child labor and fatalities specifically of children in the tunnels being built by Hamas. According to the article, whose facts were confirmed by Hamas officials, at least 160 children have been killed in the tunnels, according to Hamas themselves. Hamas is not only using child labor, but likely child slavery in building its terror tunnel network. Hamas shows extreme indifference to the lives of Palestinian children by using them as human shields, placing rockets in unschools and the like. But it actively destroys the lives of children by sending them to die underground as slaves in 19th century conditions, digging the tunnels so that the Hamas terrorists can threaten Israel. Again, the warriors of Allah don't help their situation. They don't do anything to help us realize their humanity when they do so many inhumane things. They act in a subhuman fashion. And yet the news media and even the liberal Jewish community fall all over themselves to try to make peace and to try to appease Hamas and the terrorists in Gaza. It's as if the world is upside down and backwards, and everyone is confused except me and you. And I thank you for listening, because we can help each other realize that we are sane. Now, I've got something from a Pentagon. This guy worked for Barry Ho. Got this from Reuters. Lieutenant General Michael Flynn is the outgoing head of the Defense Intelligence Agency. And he says that the destruction of Hamas would only lead to something more dangerous taking its place. We don't know if we should destroy them because it might be worse. Is this the state of America's military leadership? This is a lieutenant general. Be my little general. This is like the second highest general you can be. And he's shivering and wetting all over himself when he ponders the possibility of wiping out Hamas. It's no wonder that the Islamists are on the march. This is what we've got. He suggested, that this is Lieutenant General Michael Flynn, outgoing head of the DIA, suggested that destroying Hamas is not the answer. He says, if Hamas were destroyed and gone, we would probably end up with something much worse. The region would end up with something much worse. Somebody get me my mommy. Unbelievable. I'll tell you what, let's take him up on the challenge and just find out. He says that something like ISIS might emerge. They've already emerged, for crying out loud. But you know what? He probably has a point. Due to the weakness of men like him and his boss, Barry Ho, by the way, I discount any advice or any opinion or anything written or stated by anyone who has worked in the Ho administration. If you worked for Ho, I simply can't take you seriously. I simply cannot take you seriously. So he's worried that if Israel wipes out Hamas, because the West is just a bunch of lily-livered, pussy-footing weenies, that something like ISIS would probably emerge. And you know he probably has a point. He knows how weak and pathetic he is, and how destructive Barry Ho and the other secular socialist children have been to the United States military. This guy has firsthand knowledge of it all. He may very well be right, and that's sad. He says, quote, is there going to be peace in the Middle East? Not in my lifetime. So that's, anyway, like I said, Jesus is the answer in Gaza, in Jerusalem, in the West Bank, in Tel Aviv. And that is the answer. for the Arab and the Jew to realize that there is one Savior who can stop all the fighting and make them love each other. And it's actually true that it could happen. Christians stick together. And if the Arab and the Jew both found Christ, then they would stick together. And they would love one another. And there would be peace, even in the lifetime of this pathetic general, who right now he's had to have somebody wipe him and clean him up. And get him back up there on stage. Just unbelievable. The state of our leadership, it's just sad. And not to put too fine a point on that, but we delve a little bit further into the war file, and we find out that the United States government was in no way surprised by the rise of ISIS in Syria and Iraq. Yeah, reported in the Merced Sun Star. Merced? Isn't that North Central California? Little newspaper up there. They report that the U.S. government appeared to have been taken back last month when Mosul fell to an offensive by jihadis of the Islamic State in wherever they are, triggering the collapse of five Iraqi army divisions and carrying the extremists to the threshold of Baghdad. The government appeared to have been taken back, but a review of the record, according to the Merced Sun Star, shows that the Ho administration really wasn't surprised at all. No, in congressional testimony as far back as November of 2013, U.S. diplomats and intelligence officials made clear that the United States had been closely tracking the Al-Qaeda spinoff ISIS since 2012. The Obama administration had such early warning of the Islamic State's ambitions. Why, asks the Merced Sun Star, nearly 2 months after the fall of Mosul, is it still addressing what steps, if any, to take to halt the advance of the Islamists? Like, they knew it was coming, and yet here we are 2 months later, and they haven't even figured out what steps to take in the situation. Should we put boots on the ground? Should we send drones? Should we bomb? Should we use missile strikes? Barry says, let's go play golf with the guys from ESPN. Hey! In fresh testimony, back to the story, in fresh testimony before Congress this past week, it was revealed that the Ho administration knew 3 days in advance that the attack on Mosul was coming. One person testifying at Congress was Deputy Assistant Secretary of State Brett McGurk. And he acknowledged that the Islamic State is no longer just a regional terror organization, but is now, in fact, a full-blown army that controls nearly half of Iraq and more than a third of Syria. It controls basically the entire, I believe it's the Assyrian Empire, right? Was it the Assyrians were in the north and the, who was in the south? The Babylonians in the south? Do I have that right? Could you grab that Bible map over there? I think I'm right. I could have that backwards, but they've basically conquered what was the biblical Assyrian Empire with Nineveh province and all that. So the fighters there, ISIS, they've turned back many of the best-trained Iraqi units. I heard that in Iraq, you can get a nearly new M16 relatively cheaply, never fired, and only dropped once.
Morning and raising my head, a bad breath.
It is the Weekly Worldview. I am your host, Doug McBurney. Put those guitars away, boys. We've got to get back to the news. So, regarding ISIS and the caliphate and the Islamic State or whatever, all that, the Islamists, basically the modern-day descendants of what was left of the Nazis taking over there in the Assyrian Empire, the Merced Sun Star, back to the story, they report that there is one major complicating factor in the whole situation with ISIS in Assyria, which that's what we're going to call it. We're going to call it the Islamic State in Assyria, the new Assyrian Empire, NAE. Right. No, anyway, we'll keep working on that. We'll come up with a better acronym. The complicating factor is the fact that Barry Ho, the President of the United States, the Commander-in-Chief of the greatest military force on the planet, and perhaps in the history of the planet, has set a goal of toppling President Bashar al-Assad in Syria. And that's a goal that's shared with ISIS. They have the same goal. Barry and the terrorists that he armed, by the way. Yeah, I said he armed them. I'm making the accusation. I actually saw a very revealing report on what happened in Benghazi and what was going on with all the gun running. Another outfit that I hate to mention, but they did a very good job. The show is called For the Record on the Blaze TV. And there's no doubt in my mind as to what was going on now. I was wrong about what was going on in Benghazi. And apparently, we ended up arming a bunch of terrorists in order to fight Assad. It got away from us, apparently. Not unlike the whole Fast and Furious situation down at the border got away from us. This one got away from Barry, too. And the terrorists he armed are, in fact, now ISIS. And they share the same goal of toppling Assad. And now the Merced Sun Star is composed, I'm certain, of urinalists who went to urinalism school and who urinate in the same fashion as other urinalists who've been trained in similar fashion. And they stick to the party line. The final paragraph in the article states that some experts argue that Obama committed a key error by rejecting calls from lawmakers and national security aides to train and arm moderate rebel forces to fight Bashar al-Assad. Did he really? Did Barry Ho really reject calls to arm the enemies of Bashar al-Assad? Well, I think officially he may have. And the urinalists at the Merced Sun Star, well, they've apparently fallen for that, or at least they feel this is the obligatory party line that they stick in at the end of the story. Yeah, they say Obama said that his rejection of arming fighters in Syria was based on concerns that weapons might end up in the hands of radical elements. Yes, that's what the urinalists report in their urination. Right. He did arm them, and now now that's come back to bite all of us, and especially the Christians in Nineveh, in northern Iraq, and in Syria, especially the Christians. And who would ever thought that Barry Ho would do anything to endanger Christians anywhere? He's always been such a friend of Christians. In fact, he says he is a Christian. Yes. And of course, we have to take him at his word. We can't judge. Just because he's brought an end to 2,000 years of Christian civilization in that part of the world, or at least he's been a part of bringing an end to it, we certainly can't doubt the veracity of Barry's claim to Christianity. Certainly not. I'm not one to judge. No. All right, now, let's move from the borders of the new caliphate there in Assyria. We will now move to the borders here in the United States, where Texas Lieutenant Governor has been reported to say that the vast majority of illegal immigrants coming over the southern border are in fact not unaccompanied minors. Shazam! You're kidding me! They're not? But I watch CNN, and I watch Fox News, and I watch ABC, NBC, CBS, and all they show are those six-year-old girls with the dirty faces. It's just so sad. Well, the lieutenant governor has been looking at the documentation of what's going on there. He says maybe 12% of the illegals coming across the border are actually unaccompanied children. 12%, maybe as high as 20%. He says 80 to 85% are actually teenagers or adults. Many have criminal records. And he's attacked the federal government, has the Texas lieutenant governor, for refusing to provide resources to secure the border. He says, I gave up on the federal government 7 years ago, says the lieutenant governor of Texas. So the stories we've been seeing, as reported by CNN journalists and Fox journalists and other network journalists, apparently have been skewing the truth, which is shocking. They show the six-year-old girl with the dirty face at the Texas border, and they show the six-year-old girl covered in cement dust in Gaza, and we're all supposed to buy into that. When it's the opposite of what is true. That's classic disinformation. And that's something that I'm certain Bill Ayers has had congratulatory phone calls and maybe a golf outing or two with Barry on the success of his disinformation campaigns. Yeah, but Barry didn't have to orchestrate it. No. The disinformation was orchestrated 50 years ago in the urinalism schools. Yeah. And it's been a massive conspiracy of like-minded liberals who hate God and hate the truth and hate the Jews and hate the fact that America took the land from the Mexicans and the Indians. Yeah, that's right. So 50 years ago, urinalism schools were basically trained up in disinformation. They were shot through. They were infused with disinformation plotters, and that has all come to fruition now here in our lifetime, as we are told the opposite of what is true, and when we stand up and question it, we're called racists and haters. Just a bunch of haters. All right. Now we have some death penalty news. We go to the justice file here on the Weekly Worldview. I want to thank you again for tuning in. A story from the New York Times. A condemned Arizona prisoner last Wednesday repeatedly gasped for an hour and 40 minutes, according to witnesses, before dying at an Arizona state prison, reports the Times. That's right. This is the reporting on the execution of Joseph R. Wood, Jr. In 1989, Joseph R. Wood, Jr. murdered his estranged girlfriend, Deborah Dietz, and her father, Eugene Dietz, in cold blood. Vicious mad dog killer. Brutally snuffing out the life of a young woman and her father 25 years ago. For 25 years, he's been educated and medicated, given proper legal counsel, kept warm in the winter and cool in the summer for 25 years. And now the New York Times is a bit concerned that it took him an hour and 40 minutes to die. Now, the people who were at the execution, they said that he was actually, this brutal, vicious murderer, was unconscious the entire time that he was allegedly gasping and wheezing. And that's unfortunate in my economy. I would have rather he would have been awake to suffer and choke and gag and experience some pain, some measure of pain that might be able to approach the pain and horror and terror that he inflicted on his victims and their families. But they say he was actually asleep the whole time, and everybody who's whining about this is doing just that, whining. But the New York Times is, oh, they're quite concerned. And there's another fellow who's concerned, a judge. The Washington Post reports that appeals court judge Alex Kozinski, who is a Ronald Reagan appointee. He dissented last Monday from a decision of the full Ninth Circuit Court to stay the execution of Joseph R. Wood. Is that the fellow we were just talking about? Well, they barely mention the name of the murderer, except when they're whining about his unfortunate passing. So he dissented from the decision to stay the execution. It's always very complicated when you talk about what lawyers have ruled. He dissented from a decision to stay the execution, which, does that mean he voted for the execution? We'll have to refer this to the legal department and get an opinion on that. But he says that if the state is going to kill, it should at least do it effectively, he says. He says the guillotine is probably the best, but he does admit it seems inconsistent with America's national ethos. Yeah, the whole chopping off of the head. For some reason in the Western world, it just gives us the creeps. Yeah, we have a hard time with that. He says the electric chair and the hanging and the gas chamber are each subject to occasional mishaps, and he concludes that the firing squad is probably the most promising solution to the problems we've been having with the death penalty. And you remember, I believe it was last month, maybe 2 months ago, that some other mad dog killer lived beyond his lethal injection. The lethal injection just wasn't quite lethal enough, apparently. And he gagged and sputtered and spit, and everybody cried about him. He finally had a heart attack and died. So because the left has orchestrated a conspiracy to stop the flow of the drugs that the states rely on for lethal injection executions, there are now states who just can't get the right drugs, so they're using different mixtures and different concoctions in an effort to execute people humanely. And this judge is saying, look, maybe we should just go back to something that, quote, causes instant death every time. And he says, unlike drugs used for lethal injections, guns and ammunition are bought by the state in massive quantities. So it would be impossible to interdict the supply, like the left has done with the supply of these execution drugs. And he says that nobody can argue that the weapons are being put to a purpose for which they were not intended. You see, that's what the left has done. They've said, hey, we're taking drugs that are meant to be used in surgery and put people under them. We're using them to kill people. And so the lawyers say we're using them inappropriately, and then they actually think they have a case, and they have other lawyers who put on robes, and they call themselves judges, and they actually listen to this stuff, and they allow mad dog killers to live for 25 years when they should have been shot in the back of the head without any warning yesterday, after being duly convicted, of course. The judge says he's not anti-capital punishment, but he's always had problems with the way the death penalty is handled in the courts. And as you can see, I agree with at least the spirit of that. Yet, he has voted to stay executions in almost half of his published decisions regarding death row cases. Despite support for the death penalty in the political arena, he argues, we're stuck with a cumbersome appeals process created by the courts, which means that the death penalty in its current form wastes resources and robs victims' families of closure. That's from a sitting judge. I didn't think there was any common sense left anywhere in any of them, especially at the Ninth Circuit. But I guess, like a broken clock, a sitting judge can be right maybe twice a day. Thank you, Eddie. Certainly appreciate that. It's the Weekly Worldview. We're round in third. We're headed for home, and now we go from the justice file to the culture file, the war on spanking. I'm going to address spanking. That's right. I asked my neighbor. He asked me how his little granddaughter was around our kids. She's been coming over lately. I said, well, she's undisciplined, and the girls call her bossy. Anyway, he didn't take that. So I asked him, I said, has she ever received a spanking? And he was like, I'm home. Apparently not. I tried to tell him it's not really about spanking the kid. It's really about training the kid. If you train the kid, you don't have to spank the kid all that much. But the kid needs, that kid needs a spanking. Anyway, as do most of the kids in the neighborhood, generally, as a matter of fact. I think I'm going to have a rule. If parents want their kids to come over to our house and play in our Shangri-La that we have here at the McBurney compound, the parents are going to have to agree to allow me and my extremely attractive audio engineer to discipline their children. We probably end up with a boarding school. They probably end up leaving them here 4 days a week. Anyway, CNN reports on spanking. As they're often wont to do, they say how to discipline the next generation is a hotly debated topic. So right there, that's a major problem. When the whole culture doesn't know how to discipline the next generation, there's one thing you can bet on. The next generation is going to be sadly undisciplined. Researchers, CNN says, now say that physical punishment actually alters the brain, not only in an I'm traumatized kind of way, but also in a I literally have less gray matter in my brain kind of way. That's right. They say spanking reduces the number of brain cells. Yes, we have a 2009 study that says exposing children to harsh corporal punishment may have detrimental effects on trajectories of brain development. Harsh corporal punishment in the study was defined as at least one spanking a month for more than 3 years.
One spanking a month for more than 3 years?
That's a major problem. If you're spanking your kid once a month for 3 years, you have failed. And you probably are hurting the kid. I mean, you're definitely, not probably, you are hurting your child, and you are not qualified to be a parent. They say that these spankings are frequently done with objects such as a belt or a paddle, and researchers found that children who were regularly spanked had less gray matter in certain areas of the prefrontal cortex that have been linked to depression, addiction, and other mental health. Well, no wonder. You're beating on the kid every month for 3 years? Of course the kid's going to have problems. Here at the McBurney compound, between the age of 9 months and 3 years, the kids received a few spankings, and not very many after that, and certainly not once a month for not even 2 months, for crying out loud. Anyway, if you learn how to train your child, you don't have to beat on your child. I think an awful lot of parents, they simply don't know how. They have no resources to teach them how to train their kids, and so they end up beating on their kids. And so the parents who are spanking today are not qualified to spank their kids, and that's a horrible situation. I mean, it's disastrous for the future of civilization that parents can't control and train and discipline their children. I mean, it means World War III. That's what it means. Undisciplined youth out of control will eventually destroy and kill one another on massive scales. Anything else from CNN? Let's see. Behind all this science speak is the sobering fact that corporal punishment is damaging to children. Well, that is not corporal punishment. This, what they've acknowledged here, or what they studied, is called child abuse. For crying out loud. They say, what is spanking associated with? Aggression, delinquency, mental health problems. Hostile attribution bias, which causes children essentially to expect people to be mean to them. This bias makes the world feel especially hostile, and in turn, the children are on edge and ready to be hostile back. Over time, across cultures and ethnicities, the findings are consistent. Spanking is doing real measurable damage to the brains of our children. No, it's not spanking. Child abuse, as carried out by ignorant, hapless parents, is doing measurable damage to the whole civilization. So you know this 2009 study that CNN quotes, that what they never did was survey parents who train and discipline their children according to godly principles, as found in the Bible and as taught in conservative fundamentalist churches across the country. That's who was not surveyed. Because our kids are very well adjusted, and they have more gray matter in their prefrontal cortex than the entire news staff at CNN. In one of my children, the 5-year-old. Yeah. So there. Anyway, a report on child abuse dressed up as spanking or corporal punishment. And there you saw it right there, right? One spanking a month for 3 years. Tell me that's not child abuse. Idiots. All right, now we move on to reason number 781 to keep or get your children out of the government schools. A well-respected New York City school principal, whenever you hear that, a well-respected sa-da-da-da, you know something bad is about to be reported. A well-respected New York City school principal and her boyfriend were found trying to smuggle heroin and prescription painkillers into a maximum security prison last week. Oh, well, we don't know. It says she and her boyfriend, but she could be transgendered, and we don't know. You just don't know anymore. That's right. The principal and the boyfriend, gender inconclusive, were... The one thing we do know about them is they were trying to smuggle heroin into a prison. New York school officials have removed the principal from her job, but she remains on the payroll. She makes $130,000 a year. They've reassigned her to an administrative center where she allegedly doesn't have access to any heroin, as far as we know. Okay. She is being kept on the district's payroll until she is officially found guilty, which everyone certainly expects, but it won't be for quite some time. The principal's arrest came as a shock to New York education observers. They were shocked. The only thing I'm shocked about is that they didn't molest any children along the way. That's the shocking part. The smuggling of the heroin, yeah, right, okay. You mean they didn't abuse any children on the way to the prison? Wow. No wonder such a well-respected principal doesn't rape any children. Wow. That's something in the New York. Reason number 782 now from eagnews.org, Bridgeton, New Jersey. A former student in the Millville, New Jersey school district claims that a teacher at her local high school who sexually assaulted her and was discovered to be a convicted pedophile gave her herpes when she was 14 years old. The former math teacher who gave the girl herpes when she was 14, was sentenced to 7 years in prison back in 2010, but he's been released after only 4 years. So the family has had to file a civil lawsuit. They're seeking nearly $500,000 to try to make up for the fact that a convicted pedophile was her teacher, molested her, and gave her herpes at the age of 14. Reason number 782, if you are keeping track, to get or keep your children out of the government schools. Need I say more? I think not. Now, on into the bad, what is this? I can't read my own writing. Oh, the bad medicine file. So I was writing like a doctor because the story was, it was about medicine. So I wrote in a manner that couldn't be deciphered, just like a doctor. From the bad medicine file, in Cambridge, Massachusetts, some of the finest minds on the planet, some of the smartest people, some of the most educated people are working on a birth control revolution, a microchip that can be implanted in a woman to prevent pregnancy for up to 16 years. So the finest minds in America are working on choking off the next generation of finest minds in America. Who's going to go to Cambridge if we don't have any more kids, you morons? This new microchip can be implanted under the skin and is accessible by a handy, sleek remote control. Yes, it's a microchip that can deliver tiny amounts of hormones similar to a birth control pill. Okay, tiny amounts of hormone, that is subject to interpretation. The birth control pill and all these birth control methods that involve hormones, it's not tiny amounts. It's massive amounts that are probably doing massive amounts of damage to women for crying out loud. I know you're not allowed to say anything bad about the pill. Well, I don't like the pill, okay? I think it's one of the worst things that ever happened to Western civilization. And now we've got folks from Cambridge. We've got folks from MIT, the smartest people in the world. What are they focused on? Are they curing cancer? No, they're trying to figure out a birth control device so that they can all get rich, so that all of the secular socialist children who are hell-bent on destroying the country can spend their time fornicating instead of contributing to the future of Western civilization. The biotech firm that has developed this, they developed it first for osteoporosis patients to deliver drugs for people with osteoporosis, and it was successful. So what's the first thing that happens? Bill and Melinda Gates come along with their foundation, and they offer them millions of dollars to investigate this microchip for birth control. Bill and Melinda Gates, again. What is their obsession with killing children or preventing children? I don't understand it. Isn't Bill going to need someone to buy his Microsoft products? I guess he's okay with just the people in his gated community having one child each. I don't. So Bill and Melinda Gates come in. They find a miraculous technology. And what do? They use their millions and millions of dollars to alter it in a way that it can choke off the next generation of Einsteins. Let's see. Oh, listen to this. With this new microchip, the scientists say, when a woman wants to conceive, she or her doctor can just turn off the device with a sleek, attractive remote control. And it comes with a handy carrying case. Just a note to you women who want to abuse your bodies with hormones so that you can fornicate indiscriminately for no good reason. Don't be so sure that you can just turn it off, okay, when you want to. I mean, that's what they say now, the guys from MIT and all that. But just don't be so sure. When you go messing around with things like that, you can do damage, and I would not recommend that to anyone. All right, now, we're almost out of time. The culture file. This is the guy whose daddy was a preacher. His name is Luke Grimes, and he's an actor, according to Fox News in D.C., out in Los Angeles. He is a star on HBO's series True Blood, which is apparently a vampire show. Well, it's a lot of people watch it, I think. Yes, I believe it or not. Now, he quit the show back in December when he found out that he, as an actor, was going to have to play his character as a bisexual, and he was going to have to start a romantic relationship with an open homo vampire on the vampire show. So the actor who plays the homo is very upset about this. That the actor who... Now, this actor thought his character was not a homo. He went in, read the script for next season, found out, hey, you're going to be a homo next season. Or a bisexual, whatever that is. So the actor quit. Luke Grimes quit the show rather than, you know, do that, like on camera, please. Anyway, the actor who plays the other homo is very upset. He says, you quit your job because you don't want to play a gay part? You make a big statement when you go, I don't want to play this part because it's gay. Well, you just made a statement, and it has ripple effects, Luke. So that this homo is basically saying, you will never work in this town again. Now, who's not wearing the ribbon? Put on the ribbon. Now, Luke Grimes was born and raised in a devout Christian family. His father is a Pentecostal pastor. And you know what that means? The Pentecostals? They are extremely into miracles and healing and all kinds of stuff that makes other people think they're insane. So Luke, while he was raised in this ostensibly Christian family, and I'm sure they are fine Christians, I don't doubt them at all. But he says while he still values the religious teachings he learned as a child, he is currently undecided on the, quote, modern Christian religion. Meaning Luke Grimes is not a Christian. Even though he's not a Christian, though, he wasn't willing to do that on camera. He was like, well, wait a second. You don't exactly have to be the Pope to quit. I'm not going to do that, please. You want me to do what on camera? I'm out of here. Anyway, the show, by the way, True Blood, was created by a homo named Alan. He's an open homo, and everyone knows he's a homo. When Luke Grimes took the job, Hollywood Reporter type say he should have known because this show apparently is just sexually deviant, just all over the board. as you can expect from anything produced by HBO. Anyway, but Luke quit. Even though he's not a Christian, he's not like, you know, I'm not like that. Now, a professor specializing in LGBT and TV issues at USC, okay? That's the University of Southern California. They have a professor who specializes in LGBT and TV. Just a small subsection. So there's reason number 783 hiding in this story, the fact that USC has such a professor. Anyway, he said that in today's climate, refusing to play a bisexual role is not a good career move. No, it's like not wearing the ribbon. You don't have the ribbon, that's going to have a ripple effect. Another homo says that, well, you know, it's Luke's prerogative, but he will suffer for it. Okay, so what we're hoping and praying for here is that Luke Grimes, maybe he'll reach some sort of tipping point in his life where he has to choose sides. And maybe, Lord willing, Luke Grimes will choose to side with Jesus Christ. Wouldn't that be awesome? If this incident helped Luke realize? What do you think? Well, we'll see, because I guarantee you, this actor, he's going to have to answer for this. You did what? You said you won't do what? Oh, that's going to have ramifications. All right. So Luke Grimes joins a show that's well known as a flagrant, just disgusting sexual cesspool. But even he, I mean, when they get down to the dregs of the dregs, and he's like, wait a second. Well, we'll just have to see what happens to actor Luke Grimes. He may be drawn and quartered in the Castro District in San Francisco, for all we know. He may be kidnapped and relocated to San Francisco and publicly mutilated. Could happen. All right. But we hope that he sides with God. Now, have you heard about up in Detroit, there are people who don't pay their water bill, and they haven't paid their water bills for months and years, and so the water company in Detroit started turning off their water. Big shock, right? No, you would think that's what happens. Well, there have been protests, and people are saying that water is a right. Well, now, some Canadians are protesting the shutoffs by Detroit's water department. A group from Windsor, Canada, is planning to bring about 250 gallons of water across the border for those people who the water company has so viciously cut off their water because they didn't pay their water bill. And so the Canadians say they admit that it's a symbolic move because they're only bringing 250 gallons of water. Did you know that the average American uses about 100 gallons of water a day? Did you know that? I did not know that, but I just found that out due to an unrelated situation. So anyway, the Canadians say, hey, we've decided that we should bring water over to them. And that way we want to kind of embarrass the city of Detroit and the state, so maybe they would stop shutting off the water of these people. Because water is a right, eh? Water's a right? Is that right? Now, I don't have the Declaration of Independence. I spent most of my afternoon reading the safety disclaimer on my new toilet seat, but I don't remember seeing that either in the Declaration or the Constitution. But I'll have to read it again, and until then, well, I have to go. But I want to thank my friends at KGOV. I want to thank Denver Bible Church. I want to thank Theology Online, youngearth.org. I want to thank those guys. And as always, my other brother, Daryl, who makes it all happen here at the Weekly Worldview Studios. Should the Lord tarry, I'll return next week. And until then, may the grace of God go with you, and may the peace of Jesus Christ be upon you.